Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, the breaking news. Trump zeroing in on Kavanaugh, using the words of the justice he appointed to try to get his January 6th case thrown out, arguing that if he is not granted immunity, it is the, quote, end of the presidency as we know it. Plus, the CEO of a top luxury real estate firm says tonight that Trump can't sell his properties fast enough to pay $500 million by Monday. She's my guest tonight. And banned. He once served as the ambassador to Russia under Trump, and tonight Russia says he is no longer welcome there. Ambassador John Sullivan is with me tonight. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front this evening, the breaking news. Trump appealing to a man he placed on the Supreme Court in an effort to end the cases against him. And who is that? Well, that person is Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And in this 67-page filing filed by Trump's team today, the former president's legal team digging deep into Brett Kavanaugh's past to make their case as to why Trump should not be charged with trying to overturn the 2020 election. And as they go through this, they point to several statements made by Kavanaugh, including this one. And they quote, a president who is concerned about an ongoing criminal investigation is almost inevitably going to do a worse job as president. Trump's team also going way back in time, going to a Georgia law article that Kavanaugh wrote in which he says, and quoting again, prosecution or non-prosecution of a president is in short, inevitably and unavoidably a political act. Well, a political act, that, of course, echoes what Trump has been saying since the start of the investigation, is that all of this, these court cases are political and election interference in their own right. And Trump's filing today is his last-ditch attempt to do two things. One, of course, is to delay the special counsel's election case altogether. And two is actually to take a step back and actually avoid being charged entirely for trying to overturn the 2020 election. And on that point, Trump's legal team says, quote, if immunity is not recognized, every future president will be forced to grapple with the prospect of possibly being criminally prosecuted after leaving office every time he or she makes a politically controversial decision, that would be the end of the presidency as we know it. Now, that argument was unanimously, of course, rejected by a federal appeals court. So just to be very clear here, what you're looking at in these 67 pages is Trump's last chance to make that case and to end these cases. Caitlin Polance is out front live in Washington to begin our coverage tonight. And Caitlin, what else stands out to you in this new filing by Team Trump?
Well, Erin, we've had a lot of court filings over the course of this investigation about presidential immunity, but the language here is really aimed at scaring justices on the Supreme Court who want to protect the presidency and executive power, executive authority. Some of the language Trump uses, he talks about post-office trauma that presidents might experience if they could be prosecuted for committing crimes while they are in office. He also talks about the de facto blackmail and extortion that they could face while in office. He also writes, it could be the end of the presidency as we know it. That is a very stark phrasing of this threat that Trump's team perceives if there isn't some sort of immunity around the presidency. The other thing that stood out to me is that in one of these arguments over this 60-some page brief filing to the Supreme Court, Trump's team says motive shouldn't matter and it's unfair to Trump if there's immunity for the presidency, but it falls away in a case like this where Trump or others could be accused of trying to hold on to power because they were trying to break the law to stay in power. Here's the direct quote. The court should reject the D.C. Circuit's alternative approach of denying a president criminal immunity when his conduct is allegedly motivated by the desire to remain in power lawfully. This approach risks creating the appearance of a gerrymandered ruling tailored to deprive only President Trump of immunity while leaving all other presidents untouched. So they're saying that even if a president is breaking the law to keep hold of that office, that is not a reason why there should not be a protection around the presidency, and thus Trump should be protected here as well.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much. So I want to go straight to our legal expert, Ryan Goodman, because what Caitlin just said is pretty extraordinary. I mean, okay, they're saying because it's tailored just to apply to him. Well, there's a reason that it applies only to him, because he's the only one who actually tried to overturn an election.
Right.
So it's just this continual circular reasoning. As you go through the 67 pages, do you find anything more compelling in these arguments than you've heard from them before?
So the first half of the brief, there's nothing really compelling, and I don't think any of the justices, maybe one, but I don't even think any of them will sign on to this idea that all presidents are absolutely immune for any conduct in office. That's just a bridge too far.
Right. Well, you know, killing people. I mean, there are things.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, they've already said that if he had ordered someone to be killed, that that wouldn't count. But Team Trump has said that.
That's right. But the second half is a smart legal argument, which is to say to the court, look, when you decide that there's not absolute immunity, then give us a test in which you define what the boundaries are, then send this whole thing back down to the trial court to apply your new test, which is a delay strategy. So the idea there being that then they hold hearings at the trial court, and then the Trump side can appeal any adverse hearings all the way back up to the Supreme Court. That's the move that's being made there. But it's a smart argument. It's the argument I think they should be making as smart lawyers.
Right, which is you need to put rules and you need to put a procedure and a test.
Yes.
Understandable. Okay. So do you think it has a chance of success? And in that context, what do you make of the fact that they repeatedly appealed to Justice Kavanaugh, who, of course, was appointed by Trump, but said all these things and wrote all these things, which seem at least taken out of context to support the argument that they're making?
It's a good move to try to quote the justices back at themselves. Also, in one of the paragraphs, they have both Kavanaugh and Scalia quoted together. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, that can work. I imagine that Jack Smith might do the same thing if he thinks there's something in Kavanaugh's writings. The problem for Trump is that it's not really what Kavanaugh was saying. Kavanaugh was talking about why an incumbent president should not be distracted by ongoing criminal prosecutions or investigations. That's the Kavanaugh argument. Kavanaugh, I don't think, wants to be associated with this absolute immunity argument which they're making. So it actually might turn him off.
Right. And just to be clear, incumbent, and Trump is not incumbent. I mean, just to...
Absolutely. And in fact, the argument
not apples to apples.
Right. And those folks who think that the incumbent president is immune make the argument that he's immune or she's immune until they leave office. And that's the
situation we're in right now.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Ryan, thank you very much. And as we are tracking this breaking news, we've got more breaking developments right now, which is that Donald Trump is now slamming the judge who ruled against him and his company in the Trump-org fraud case, because literally we are in a time ticking down situation. Trump running out of time to come up with $464 million. That is what he's required to come up with to post bond by law by Monday on the deadline.
Are you looking forward to this campaign, this election?
I've been campaigning.
How are you doing it? You've got all these legal cases mounting up. They valued Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
At $18 million. I mean,
because the courts are rigged.
What's going on?
The courts are rigged. They did. They valued it. It had an appraisal at $1.5 billion, $1 billion, $2 billion. Who knows what it's worth? It's worth, because that was good for their narrative. So they valued it at $18 million because it's a crooked legal system, very crooked. That's why people are leaving New York. Companies are fleeing New York because of even this decision.
As our own Daniel Dale has pointed out, what Judge Engoron said was that a Palm Beach County tax assessment from the decade of 2011 to 2021 appraised the market value of Mar-a-Lago between $18 and $28 million. Now, this all comes as Trump's lawyers admitted so far that he does not have the $464 million, which he is required to post by law by Monday. What that means is that if he is treated like every other defendant in a posting bond situation, you just have to do it. You have to sell assets. You have to do whatever you have to do to make that bond. And for Trump, that would mean that he may have to sell some of his most prized properties. These are mega ticket items, or risk watching the state of New York seize them, as the state of New York has said it will. Out front now, someone who knows all of this inside out, the real estate industry inside out, Bess Friedman. She is the CEO of Brown Harris Stevens, which is a luxury real estate company that includes properties in New York, New Jersey, and Florida, all of the locations we're talking about. And Bess is also a lawyer. So, Bess, you know, if just taking a look at where we are, today's Tuesday. It's only Tuesday. Okay, but by Monday, he has to post this bond. If he hasn't started the process of selling any of his properties, and by the way, I don't even mean started. I mean, if you aren't really, really far down the path, these are big, big buildings. Does he have time to sell any of them by Monday?
I think it's a little, we don't have enough time. I mean, by Monday, that's really, I think you need at least 30 days to get any of these properties sold. But the property that you alluded to, Mar-a-Lago, potentially, that could be something that could be sold quickly. I think the valuation is something in the hundreds of millions, and I think there could be a buyer for something like that.
And that would be literally, if you're talking about doing that between now and Monday, that's picking up the phone, calling someone, and then literally writing a check.
Yeah, I mean, there could be plenty of international people who want to buy that property. I mean, there's properties that are priced at 150 and 200 million that are nearby that. And Palm Beach is like the NVIDIA, of real estate. It's just shot up like a rocket. And people do want to live there. They've moved there. So I think that would be the best case scenario as to property. If he's trying to sell quickly, I would encourage that.
So, all right, now that's $240 million estimated. I mean, who knows? You know, he's a desperate seller in this case. Someone picks up the phone and makes that call this week. So I don't know what it'd be. That's still half of what it would be. So when you look at other properties, I mean, you know, you've got his penthouse. Bloomberg values that at $40 million. I mean, that doesn't get you there either. But is that something you could even sell quickly?
I mean, the good news about that property is the location is incredible. It's a condominium, which means it could sell quickly. You still have to get through a board process, a package, an application. But it's a building that was built in the early 80s. So I don't know if it's been renovated. And remember, you know, not everybody wants that affiliation with that building, with the name. You know, it does have a stigma for some. And so that could be a bit of a challenge. And so, you know, the price doesn't determine the market. The market determines the price. And so it will depend on if there's somebody who really wants to buy something like that and do a renovation and make it their own and is comfortable living in a building that has his name. And for that's not everybody's taste. So I think it could be a bit of a challenge.
And so how do you really even turn something like this quickly? I mean, what is the process to even do this? And when you talk about it, someone who they're going to want to get a deal.
Right.
This is the definition of a desperate seller. In this particular instance, you've got 5 days.
Yeah. I mean, I think he needs to look at all of his assets in real estate. He has a lot of them, great locations, and he needs to figure out what those values are and get them on the market and get people looking at them. I'm sure there's interest. I mean, look, Jeffrey Epstein's mansion sold in New York City. It took some time. They had to cut the price, but there was somebody that was willing to buy that. Same with Bernie Madoff. We were able to sell his co-op. So people will buy the real estate. It just will take time. But the sooner the better, and the sooner they evaluate what he has and get it out there, it will be better for him.
All right. Bess, thank you very much. I mean, just an incredible situation. I didn't even believe we're even talking about such a thing, but this is the reality. All right. Thanks so much.
Aaron.
And next, well, in the slammer for Trump, former Trump aide Peter Navarro is inside this Miami prison on your screen tonight. That is where he is, as the former president resides comfortably, not far away, right now in Mar-a-Lago. Michael Cohen, who also served time because of his ties to Trump, is out front next. Plus, breaking news, polls are about to close in Ohio, and this is absolutely crucial. This is the fight for control of the Senate. Trump facing a major test of his power there tonight. And then another doctored Royals photo taken by Kate Middleton. We're going to talk to a professional photographer who says she knows exactly what was altered in the photo, and you'll see bit by bit.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight in the slammer for Trump, Peter Navarro, Trump's former White House aide, is now sitting inside this Miami prison. It's one of the oldest prison camps in the United States. And it happens to be less than 100 miles from where Trump is living right now at Mar-a-Lago. Navarro joins the growing list of Trump associates who have served time. Michael Cohen, who will join me in a moment, sentenced to 3 years behind bars. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon sentenced to 4 months in prison. That sentence on hold as he's pending an appeal. Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, former campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, Trump associate Roger Stone, the deputy chairman of Trump's campaign Rick Gates, all were sentenced to time behind bars. Former Trump org CFO Alan Weisselberg has served time at Rikers and could be going back. I mean, when you think about it and you list it out like that, it's pretty incredible. Sunlen Serfaty is out front with more.
I'm pissed. That's what I'm feeling right now.
Former Trump advisor Peter Navarro, defiant, as he reports to federal prison in Miami today.
Every person who has taken me on this road to that prison is a friggin' Democrat and a Trump hater.
Navarro is facing a four-month sentence for refusing to comply with a congressional subpoena from the committee that investigated the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol.
But as hard as it will be on me and as hard as it will be on anybody who is in there, it's harder on their families. And this is who those Democrats have hurt.
Navarro, at age 74, will be serving his time in an air-conditioned dormitory within the prison, reserved for elderly inmates. He'll have access to TVs, the ability to email and make phone calls.
Chinese protectionism.
At one time, a respected economist, a voice on China, and Harvard-trained professor, Navarro regularly appeared on mainstream media.
Peter is brash.
And decades ago, tried unsuccessfully to run for local office as an independent and Democrat, attracting the endorsement of Hillary Clinton and landing a prime speaking spot at the 1996 Democratic National Convention.
Together with President Clinton, we will protect Medicare and Social Security and a woman's right to choose.
But some who have known him since back then say his shaky ideologies.
He's a great chameleon. He clearly was able to adapt to who they are and what they're about.
Were trumped easily by the spotlight.
We have the great Peter Navarro.
Navarro morphing into a MAGA loyalist.
This president has been the toughest president on China of any American president.
And Trump devotee.
If you look statistically at what happened, clearly the president won this election and was leading on election day.
Promoting some of the former president's most controversial and baseless claims.
And on things like, for example, the hydroxychloroquine, he has a strong point of view. There's as many doctors on the other side.
So Peter, first of all, on a basic level, you're an economist, not a scientist.
And now, like Trump.
So the little story here is Navarro's going to prison today.
Attempting to turn his fate into a badge of honor.
Men and women of America throughout our history have shed blood, lost their lives for the defense of this country. It's a much smaller sacrifice to be willing to go to prison.
And this marks the first Trump official to go to prison for contempt charges of Congress. Steve Bannon, of course, has also been convicted of contempt charges for defying those subpoenas from the January 6th committee. But of course, he has remained out of jail, Aaron, so far because he is ruling and trying to appeal this ruling. Aaron. All right, Sunlen, thank you very much. And out front now, former Trump attorney who also went to prison, Michael Cohen, the author of Revenge, How Donald Trump Weaponized the U.S. Department of Justice Against His Critics, also the host of the Mea Culpa and Political Beatdown podcast. So, Michael, you hear Navarro, he's saying he's defending the country by going to prison, standing by, you know, I'm standing by Trump, I'm going to prison for him. You were once, to some extent, in his shoes, right, for things that you did. While with Trump, you served time. And we've got images of you going to prison in 2019, a day I'm sure you will never forget because of your loyalty to Trump. There you are in the car. So as you see Navarro go to prison, What do you see?
It makes me recall an old adage, troubled people cause trouble. Donald is that troubled person, and he's causing trouble. Peter Navarro has no idea just how bad prison actually is. And I'm speaking from experience, not once, but twice, when I was unconstitutionally remanded the second time back. It's terrible. But there's more implications that people aren't even aware of. All your bank accounts end up getting closed. You can't get credit cards. You can't even open up a bank account at any bank because your name is on a list. Your whole life changes. And why is it changing? Because he's doing something for Donald Trump, a guy who's 100 miles away from him, enjoying a Mar-a-Lago burger and a bunch of ice cream at his gilded club. I don't know what he's thinking.
So let's talk about where he is. So you served about a year in prison, and then you continued to serve your term during COVID. You were okay. But Navarro, he's sentenced to 4 months. Does that make a... What are those first 4 months like? I mean, how does he manage that? And also, we had shown images, but he is in FCI Miami, which is a prison you know a lot about.
Well, I know something about it. I was in FCI Otisville, very different than FCI Miami. I knew a few people that actually came from FCI Miami to Otisville. It's not a good place. No different than Alan Weisselberg, who spent 100 days at Rikers Island.
Rikers Island.
It is not a cakewalk. Any of these FCIs are not. First of all, you come in to the facility and you have nothing. It's a weird experience, especially for somebody who is of his age. You don't even own a toothbrush. You don't have a hairbrush. You don't have soap. You don't have shampoo. All you have is what they give to you, which is a pillow, a blanket. They give to you one pair of socks, a pair of underwear, a pair of pants that generally don't fit. They do that on purpose, and a T-shirt and a regular shirt. That's what you get. That's what you own. So coming from the world that Peter Navarro came from, spending time at the gilded casa of Donald, right, Mar-a-Lardo.
Harvard professor, known economist. I mean, I knew Peter Navarro all the way back when I worked CNBC. He was a guy who came on regularly. He was
This is not an experience that he wanted to, you know, to have in his memory.
You said it takes your soul.
It does. Prison takes your soul. The time that you're away from your family, your friends, your life, you never get it back. You never get it back. On top of that, I don't know what their rules are right now in terms of COVID. Do they hold them the first 5 days, 10 days, 14 days in solitary? That's another issue in and of itself. Remember, I did 51 days of solitary confinement.
He gave a press conference today, Navarro did, okay, talking about it, obviously before he walks, on the inside of FCI Miami. And I wanted to play one part of it for you.
Sure.
Are you nervous, and have you spoken to Donald Trump?
I am not nervous. I'm going to claim executive privilege on the Donald Trump conversations. I've had the greatest amount of support from Donald Trump and his team.
What do you say to that? Greatest amount of support from Donald Trump and his team. As he's heading to prison, of course, Trump is not.
And look where you're going. And trust me, it's easy to be a television tough guy when you're on the outside. When you're on the inside, there are rules. Whether you're in a satellite camp, a low, like I was in, or you're in a maximum security, the rules are still the rules. He doesn't live by those rules. He's never had to live by those rules. This is an adjustment that he has no idea what he's in store for.
Oh, it is incredible when we think about it. All right. Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it.
Let me also just say the food is terrible.
Well, there's that. You don't control what you eat. You don't control when you sleep. I mean, all of it. I mean, as you say, it is impossible to imagine it. But when you say it, perhaps gives everyone a glimpse into what it could be. All right. Well, next, we have breaking news. We are just moments away from polls closing in Ohio. And this race matters. Hunger Games is basically playing out in the Republican primary for Senate. Senate seat that could decide the entire balance of power. And Trump is at the center of it tonight. Plus, U.S. troops about to get kicked out of a country that was once a key U.S. ally. Is Putin behind this?
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, the first polls have just closed in tonight's elections. Five states are voting, and we are watching closely for signs of strengths or weaknesses for Biden and Trump. But there are other crucial races tonight, and we are expecting results from Ohio at any moment. Republicans there trying to take down Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, locked in an ugly primary fight. And in that three-way race, the Trump-backed candidate is in a dead heat with a more moderate Republican. So can he bring him over the finish line tonight? It is a crucial test, and Jeff Zeleny is out front.
He's one of the last Democrats standing in Ohio.
Thank you for the endorsement. Thank you all for being here.
Senator Sherrod Brown is one of the biggest Republican targets of the year, whose seat could determine control of the U.S. Senate. But that fall campaign may hinge on tonight's outcome of an acrimonious GOP primary, which in the closing days has revolved as much around Donald Trump as any of the rivals in the race.
Bernie, if these people all vote, which they will, you're going to win. Man.
The former president has taken sides and thrown elbows in a bruising three-way Republican contest. His candidate, Cleveland businessman Bernie Moreno,
how does Ohio feel about President Donald J. Trump?
Is seen by some top Ohio Republicans as the party's weakest choice to win in November.
The person clearly who has the best shot at winning in the fall is Matt Dolan. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
Republican Governor Mike DeWine is backing State Senator Matt Dolan, whose family owns the Cleveland Guardians baseball franchise and has repeatedly drawn Trump's ire.
My attitude is anybody that changes the name of the Cleveland Indians to the Cleveland Guardians should not be a senator.
The campaign has been caustic and costly, with more than $40 million spent on TV and digital ads alone.
MAGA alert. President Trump wants you to vote for outsider businessman Bernie Moreno.
Matt Dolan, out for himself, not you.
Can you trust Frank LaRose?
Including by a Democratic super PAC with ties to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, promoting Moreno, Trump's candidate.
Moreno would do Donald Trump's bidding.
Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose, the third candidate in the race, told us it was a clear sign Democrats wanted to run against Moreno.
Why would they spend over $3 million to try to boost Bernie Moreno? Well, it's pretty clear Chuck Schumer believes that he's the weakest opponent to Sherrod Brown.
In an increasingly red Ohio, where Trump won by 8 points in 2020, the race has become a test for the style and substance of the Republican Party in the age of Trump.
Fighting is about results, okay? And it doesn't mean you go and shout and scream. You can respect the other side, but you fight for what you believe in.
Tonight, it will become clear whether more voters respond to Dolan's attempts to lower the temperature or follow Trump's lead.
Everybody's bashing everybody. I believe the Moreno commercials that he will support the Trump agenda.
For Brown, as he seeks a fourth term in the Senate, he acknowledges the challenge ahead, not only from Republicans.
Maybe my toughest race.
How much of a weight is the Democratic Party and the Biden administration on you as a candidate?
I always run my own race. I will continue to run my own race. I don't try to analyze if Biden does well here or Trump does well there. I've run ahead of our presidential candidates, and I will again.
So, Aaron, as the polls are closing here tonight, we are getting a snapshot of the electorate. Republicans who voted today, the preliminary exit poll numbers are so instructive. Let's take a look at a couple of them. Okay. The opinion of Trump when he was president, 57% of voters today said they strongly approved. 20% said they somewhat approved. So if you add those together, some three quarters of Republicans approve, perhaps not surprisingly, but the disapproved number also interesting. 14% strongly disapprove, 7% somewhat disapprove. So clearly there's an opening there for a non-Trump candidate. But Aaron, take a look at these numbers for President Biden. Republican primary voters were asked if they believed he legitimately won in 2020. 6 in 10 Republicans say he did not. 32% say he did. So that, of course, sets the table for the conversation going on in the months ahead to November. Aaron, the reason this race is so important, the Senate majority hinges on two seats, on only one if the president's party is still in power here. So that's why this race will be one to keep an eye on until November, Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff Zeleny. Basil Smichel, former chief of the New York Democratic Party out front, and Harry Enten, our data guru. Harry, those numbers on these exit polls, I suppose we should no longer be surprised. No. What do you say? Shocked, but not surprised.
Yes.
About the GOP 63% saying Biden is not the legitimately elected. But it is incredible.
Yeah. I don't think we can be surprised anymore, but we can still shake our heads that about two-thirds of the Republican electorate, depending on which primary state you're jumping to, believe something that's a fugazi, that's fake. We all know that Biden legitimately won that election, yet two-thirds of Republicans believe otherwise, depending, again, on the state you're looking at. And that just shows the stranglehold that Donald Trump has over the Republican Party. There's still maybe about a quarter of that Republican Party that's willing to go the other way, that is that strongly or somewhat disapproved that Jeff was pointing out. But the fact is they are a minority. The majority of the party is firmly in Trump's pocket.
All right. On that point, though, I'm just going to take the strongly disapprove on this exit poll for Republican voters in Ohio tonight. 14%.
Right.
Strongly disapprove.
Right.
What does that mean? Does that mean that they are, I mean, you could presume maybe those are people who are going to have gone for Haley or, but do they get back on board? Do they, not, I mean, and are they truly going to be the people who possibly decide this whole election?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the general election, this is the kind of, that's the kind of voter that Joe Biden's going to go after, right? He's going to go after that sort of not Republican, but not satisfied with Donald Trump, would probably have voted for a Nikki Haley, but really just doesn't like the direction of the Republican Party. But it is concerning, quite frankly, that 60% of the Republican, remember when Ohio,
63%.
Remember when Ohio was a swing state? Remember those?
I remember standing in Ohio, so it must have been 2012.
Yeah.
And I was there that night on election night because we needed someone there because as goes Ohio, goes the nation.
Yeah, that's right.
That was the last time that was
right.
true.
And that is, that, so it's really concerning that with 63% in Ohio of Republicans, but we see that pattern across the country, that there is this denialism of Joe Biden being the duly elected president of this country that really does go to show you how Donald Trump has really changed the Republican Party to shift to his worldview.
Yeah.
It also suggests that which is what's happening in Ohio now, this might be the last stand for a sort of mainstream Republican to potentially meet Sherrod Brown in the general election. But where are mainstream Republicans across the country in terms of their ability to stand up against Trump-endorsed Republicans?
I should refine what I said. I don't mean it's the last time that Ohio went the way of the country, but it's the last time that Ohio was really up for grabs, right? Ohio has become a red state. Okay, so in this context, Ohio being a red state, where's President Biden spending his time? Well, not in Ohio. No. He's going to Nevada and Arizona, these battlegrounds, and certainly he's going to go to the Midwest as well. But he's going there. Large Hispanic and Latino populations in both, crucial voting block this time around, especially in the context of the broader conversations. But 1.8 million votes combined at stake between those two states. And these Hispanic and Black voters and Biden, this has been an area he's been struggling.
Yeah.
What some might consider to have been, certainly among Black voters, his base, but even among some Hispanic voters. So you have been talking about this with me for a long time.
Yes.
Where is Biden now versus where he was 4 years ago with those groups?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of folks who have been analyzing these numbers and show that Biden's been doing significantly worse among Black and Hispanic voters compared to the exit polls 4 years ago. But there was some argument, okay, wait a minute, but what about this point in time? Well, I went back to this point in time 4 years ago, and you still see Biden doing considerably worse than he was 4 years ago.
So this is polls 4 years ago at this time in the election.
Okay, correct.
Got it. Okay.
Exactly right. And what we see is, look, Joe Biden's still winning among Black voters, but only by 50 points. He was up 72 points at this point in the 2020 cycle. And among Hispanic voters, Biden is barely ahead, just by 2 points versus 21 points at this point in the 2020 cycle. On those Black voters, I have never seen a Democratic presidential candidate in my lifetime leading by such a small margin as Joe Biden is at this particular point in time.
So,
do those numbers leave your jaw on the floor?
I am concerned, and I'm concerned for this particular point. This notion of the lesser of two evils has really started, has sunken in. And that is what's concerning me. In 2016, there was a lot of conversation around the lesser of two evils, comparisons to, from Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. That sameness, samesies.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same. It's never been the same. And the concern is that that language and that narrative will get baked into this election. They are not the same. When you have Donald Trump out there saluting the individuals who were engaged in an insurrection and went to jail, if you have him out there
but
saying
these voters,
that
they basically saying they don't care about that or they care about other things? I mean, plus 21 to plus 2.
No, I honestly think that by the end of this election, they will care. They'll care about democracy. They'll care about the fact that Donald Trump is out there with his conservative colleagues restricting voter access as opposed to expanding it. And let me tell you why I am more concerned about that point than anything else. Because the Brennan Center for Justice just released a report saying that the gap between white and non-white voter turnout is widening. And it's widening in states where the Supreme Court has actually gutted the Voting Rights Act. And what I would say in response to that is, look at what conservatives, both voters and electeds and judges, have done. They've restricted your rights, not increased them. And that's the kind of message that I think needs to hit home with those voters.
And so, Harry, Biden, Trump has also been going to those same states.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the states. We all know these are the great seven that determined the whole thing last time and very well may this time. I mean, you had, Arizona, Georgia, 10,000 votes between the two of them. So what are the states you're looking at now?
Yeah, I mean, look, you pointed out Georgia where there's a large African-American population, so that hits on the slide we just spoke about. Yep. But what about Arizona and Nevada? Those are the states where 20%+ of likely voters are Hispanic. And look here, it's the same trend line among Hispanics at this point in 2020 versus at this point in 2024 right now. The Biden still leads, but those leads have shrunk significantly by somewhere between 20 and 30 percentage points. I have never seen anything like this, Aaron. And I'm left asking the question, either one, we're on our way to a major realignment, or two, pollsters have gotten something very, very wrong.
Well, we will get there. We will get there because I believe that African-American voters who have stood up for the Democratic Party time and time again recognize that they are probably the only voters that really stand between the future of democracy and further elections versus autocratic government, authoritarian government.
Well, we will see. But those numbers certainly are stunning, and we're going to be talking about that.
I think so.
Where are we talking about that? All right, thank you both. And out front next, he was America's ambassador to Russia under Trump. Now, though, he has been banned. Ambassador John Sullivan is next. And former President Trump now threatening to deport Prince Harry if he's reelected. How come? Tonight, the U.S. losing to Putin. More than 1,000 U.S. military personnel getting kicked out of Niger. An essential military agreement falling apart. Niger wants a major American ally, turning instead to Putin. Russia has been feverishly working to expand its presence, not just in Niger, but across all of Africa, mineral-rich and many, many countries, with one top U.S. military official warning that several African nations are, quote, at the tipping point of falling under Russia's influence. Out front now, John Sullivan, the former U.S. ambassador to Russia. And ambassador, you know, we have seen this in countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, across Africa. Now you've got 1,000 Americans kicked out of Niger, a 10-year deal over. This was a crucial location for U.S. troops, counter-terror efforts. Putin now gaining ground. Can you explain why this matters so much?
Sure. Thanks, Aaron. It's great to be with you. Yeah, this has been a longstanding problem that the Russians, through their proxy organizations like the Wagner Group, have been working to ingratiate themselves into these countries. It undermines the United States counterterrorism mission. It allows them to expropriate the natural resources of these countries, valuable natural resources, gold, including some that are essential for U.S. national security, like uranium. In Niger, for example. So it's a national security problem for the United States, but it's even bigger problem for all the people who live in these countries whose autocratic governments are now associating with what amounts to a private military contractor slash terrorist organization like the Wagner Group.
And you mentioned the Wagner Group. You know, before Prigozhin was killed in that plane crash, after his attempted coup, you know, we had marched half of the way to Moscow. He and his mercenary army were, you know, deeply involved in Africa, right? That was where he had actually gotten so much of his money from all of the minerals and all of the deals that he did, natural resources, weapons running. And can you tell me how active they still are, the Wagner Group, and what are the mercenaries, how are they getting mercenaries there?
Well, Aaron, it's really like a franchise, the way to think of it. The Wagner organization, we call it Wagner, it was really a bunch of corporate shell companies that recruited Russian military, other military personnel to go in and provide security services to autocrats in these countries. The franchise founder has been eliminated by Vladimir Putin, and now they're recruiting more military personnel to go in and undermine security, undermine the counterterrorism mission in these countries, support autocrats, and undermine the West.
So former President Trump has just done an interview with Nigel Farage of the UK, and they talk about Vladimir Putin, specifically Trump's relationship with Putin, and how Trump says things would be very different if he were president right now. I wanted to play the exchange for you, Ambassador.
Is Putin the kind of man we can negotiate with?
Yeah, I think he is.
Do you?
So we did very well with him. Look, you know, I'm the one that was the one. I stopped the pipeline, Nord Stream 2. People don't realize that. You know, they say, I like Putin. I got along with Putin great.
Putin responds to strength.
I don't know. I don't know what he responds to. He responded to me.
Ambassador, you are one of the few now who in these past years have seen Putin and Trump up close. So what do you think about this right now? Is Vladimir Putin right now the kind of person anyone can negotiate with?
Well, I think former President Trump's approach to Putin, like his approach to other world leaders, was highly personal. He wanted to engage in personal diplomacy, develop a relationship with world leaders, including Putin, even when it was inconsistent with longstanding U.S. foreign policy and national security policy. His rationale was that he could develop a relationship and then do good things for the United States. But a leader like Putin can't be manipulated that way. And President Trump thought that he could develop this personal relationship, and it just wouldn't work. Didn't work then, won't work in the future.
All right. Thank you very much, Ambassador. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. And next, another photo taken by Kate Middleton, doctored, a professional photographer who knows exactly what was changed. We'll show you next.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.